Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast.
Here at newsounds.org, we still can't have live guests in our studios, so for these Soundcheck Podcasts, we're doing a mix of remote performances and some memorable sessions from our archives. This is one of the latter. And for this one, we take you back to 2017. Throw those curtains wide. One day like this a year and see me rise. From the studios of New York Public Radio, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. I'm John Schaefer. When a British band wins the Mercury Prize and a Brit Award for Best Band, you might think, okay, they've hit their high note. Well, the band Elbow, based in Manchester, won the Mercury Prize in 2008, and they won that Brit Award in 2009, but since then they've gone from strength to strength. They've released a couple of great records, a terrific EP, and the best of Elbow. The band is here with us in the studio to play a couple of songs for us, beginning with All Disco. Here is Elbow, live on Soundcheck.
Shoot. searching, it's really all disco. What does it prove if you die for a cheer? Don't you know it's all disco?
That is the British band Elbow here in our New York studio with the song All Disco. You can find a version of that on their early 2017 album called Little Fictions. And let me introduce you to the members of Elbow. Guy Garvey singing with Craig Potter at our piano and Mark Potter playing the guitar, Pete Turner playing the bass. And with us today, Alexander Reeves on drums and Violetta Barania and Rosie Langley. We'll be picking up violins shortly, but we're singing backing vocals on that song. And Guy, to you and the band, I'm so happy to have you guys here with us.
Thank you for having us. We're very happy to be here.
So with a title like Little Fictions and with the kind of storytelling that your songs have given us over the years, I couldn't help wondering when I saw that title if you have actually written short fiction yourself.
Not that's ever been published or even read by anyone else. I've had a try a few times. I remember trying to write stories just for pleasure when I was as young as 10. I wrote, I think probably the first story I wrote just to see if I could write stories was about robots taking over a primary school, evil robots. And then I knew I wasn't really very good at it. So no.
Was it the idea or the execution that left?
I didn't have
the
patience.
Ah.
Yeah, it's like I had a really detailed introduction to it, describing the arrival of the packaging and the robots inside, and then I got bored of the whole idea and sort of rushed the ending.
Oh. Well, the song you just played, All Disco, I've heard that was inspired by Black Francis of the Pixies, is that right?
Yes, yeah.
How does that turn into this?
I grab me words from wherever, and then whatever music the lads come up with, it just triggers things. It just joins dots.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the phrase It's All Disco, in the context that I heard it the first time, I was interviewing Black Francis for my radio programme in the UK. And I said, you've been quite the shapeshifter over the years, you know, the sort of art punk of the Pixies.
Right.
And then he's been country and blues. What's next? And he said, oh, all of that stuff, you know, it's all disco. And it just made me laugh. And it was in the context of the song, it was about a British musician who died, who I suspect took his own life. And because I don't know that for sure, because I didn't actually know the person, I've never sort of said who it is.
Mm.
But I spoke to the boys about it and I played them some of the music and we all really loved it. And we all sort of felt that may be the case. And it quite often is in not just music, but in any of the creatives that people are troubled and maybe investing yourself too much in something can be dangerous. That's what I felt. So in the context of the song, it's taking that sort of slightly elder statesman stance, sort of saying, hey, look, put everything into it, but not quite everything. You know, it's all disco.
Right. Now, I mentioned this is a British band, it's an English band, but it's specifically a Manchester band, it seems.
Yeah.
Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, even more specific, we're all from Bury, which is, you know, we sort of say Manchester because of its heritage and because no one's ever heard of Bury, you know.
Spelled B-U-R-Y for American listeners who are thinking B-E-R-R-Y.
Yeah.
So is that part of Blue Manchester or Red Manchester?
We've never revealed if we have any allegiance to any football team because it would automatically harm our home audience. When asked, I usually say, we love both our teams equally.
Does anybody believe that?
No.
I actually know New York Yankee fans who also are New York Met fans, but that's very, very rare.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know, for Manchester United and Manchester City fans to be one and the same thing seems really improbable.
Once tweeted when both teams had a big win on the same Saturday, I once tweeted, wow, the City and United fans dancing arm in arm in Albert Square. And nobody on Twitter believed me. And it was absolute nonsense. It was positive propaganda, but nobody believed me.
Now, despite the Manchester roots and the continued presence of Manchester looming in the imagery, I mean, songs like Lost Worker Bee, the Worker Bee is the image of Manchester, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, I have it tattooed on my arm, in fact.
But you have also had a dalliance with New York.
Yeah, I lived here for a few months and I was considering living here for a bit longer. I got to the end of a chapter in my life and me and the boys had been working more and more remotely and I realised it was a possibility to live wherever I wanted, really. Mm-hmm. And I came straight to New York. But after a while, I missed my family and my friends too much. And so I went home. But it was a lovely little stay and it was great sort of being relatively anonymous because we're quite well known at home.
Yeah,
it meant I could go back to sitting in the corners of cafes and bars with my notebook and I britted it up a bit, do you know what I mean? I acted more English than I actually am because it had a lot of purchase with people that I met. Oh, that really lovely English guy that sits there in the yellow Mac, keeps himself to himself. I enjoyed that role.
Yeah. For a few months.
Yeah, you're mm-hmm. boring, yeah.
The band is Elbow, and so I love the song Magnificent. She says, on the record, it's the Halle Orchestra playing with you guys. And it's not the first time that you've worked with full orchestra, and I believe not the first time you've even worked with the Halle Orchestra, is
no,
that right?
No, we've done a bunch of stuff down here. They are Manchester's oldest band, really.
I think they're England's oldest orchestra.
They're the oldest professional orchestra in the world.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And a wonderful bunch of people. And actually, they came in on this session and they played what we asked them to and hit it straight off first time. And I said, you really are the best, aren't you? And literally, like, 35 of them just sort of shrugged and nodded, you know? I like the fact that even Manchester's orchestras have that same swagger.
Yeah. All right, well, let's hear a slightly scaled-down version. I mean, the ideas are big, the sounds are big, the emotions are big. It's a big band, Elbow. Let's hear a live performance of the song Magnificent, she says.
This is where the bottle lands, where all the biggest questions meet, with little feet stood in the sand. And this is where the echo slowed to nothing on the tide, where a tiny pair of hands finds a seaborne piece of glass and sets it as a sapphire in her mind. And there she stands, throwing both her arms around the world, a world that doesn't even how much it needs this little girl. It's so gonna be magnificent, she says. It's so gonna be magnificent. This is where it all began, to light your mother's cigarette. Meant I got to touch her hand, and my heart there defrosting in a gaze, wasn't built to be that way. And suddenly I understand, there on the sand, throwing both her arms around the world, a world that doesn't even know how
chance.
Well, that's beautiful. Hard to credit that that came from seven unplugged musicians.
Oh, thank you.
Elbow here in our soundcheck studio with Magnificent, she says. Guy, do you know Warson Shire, the London poet?
No.
A lot of people know her because Beyonce used a bunch of her poems in Lemonade.
Okay.
But it's odd because she has a poem called What They Did Yesterday Afternoon, and your lyrics for this song almost sound like a rejoinder. It ends with her saying, "Later that day, I sat and held an atlas in my lap, ran my hands across the whole world and whispered, 'Where does it hurt?' It answered, 'Everywhere, everywhere, everywhere.'" And the image in your song of the little girl, you know, holding both her arms around the world and the repeated magnificent, she says, it just seems like the optimistic rejoinder to this really beautiful but heartbreaking Warson Shire poem.
I'll check that out. It sounds lovely.
It is lovely, but so is this. And the album as a whole, Little Fictions, seems to be, in really difficult times, a kind of a ray of optimism or hope. Was it intended that way?
Yes, we had a discussion along those lines, you know, a very frank discussion, just the four of us in the middle of rural Scotland in the winter, and we got up to start the writing for this album. And the working title for the album was Love.
Hmm.
And it was almost the title as well, because we liked the idea of seeing that in great big letters on the underground or on a billboard poster. Yeah, it's important to reflect what's going on, but also I think if you naturally try and offer positivity and hope in your stuff, which we do, which comes from the chords the boys choose, and what we find satisfying as musicians is drama and pause and subtlety and, yeah.
We
tried aggressive, actually, for a bit. We tried sort of aggressive and destructive, but we couldn't quite pull it off. Yeah, we didn't live that for a while.
But you have an almost classicist sense of, like, dynamics, you know, the push and pull of light and dark, of loud and soft.
Yeah.
And Craig, you produced the recent records by the band, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
They don't seem to be produced the way a quote-unquote normal rock band record would be made. I mean, you've got brass choirs and vocal choirs and string orchestras and stuff like that. So how do you approach that as a producer?
I think that comes from all of us rather than me as a producer, and it's sort of been our sound on and off for a while. But I think it's just one of those things that no matter what instrumentation we sort of start off with, it's always whatever serves the song best. So none of us are particularly precious about getting our keyboard bit in there or guitar bit in there. And if it just needs, you know, a string section and drums and bass, and that's what it'll be, you know.
Yeah, but if it just needs a drum and bass, you've got a drummer and a bass player sitting there in the room.
If it
just needs a string section.
Yeah, well,
you know, I mean, you can't, like, open up a door and find, you know, a whole...
No, we are very lucky in the fact that we know that we can possibly get our hands on the Halle Orchestra. That is true.
Yeah.
Plus, Violetta is very good at demoing as an entire orchestra.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, which she did that a couple of weeks ago. Ended up tracking her, I don't know, 23, 24 times or something.
Well, and she and Rosie did a fine job just now of sitting in for the entire Halle Orchestra.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So, Little Fictions, the most recent album by the band Elbow. I did mention before that the band does tend to think big, you know? There are big emotions and big anthemic hooks in a lot of the songs. And you, Guy, have spoken kind of publicly about so-called prog rock way before its relatively recent rehabilitated image.
Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, yes, I did. When it was still a dirty word,
I
fessed up that we liked the odd bit of prog. Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, sort of grew up on the Peter Gabriel Genesis records. And
actually, my show last week was about how much I love Phil Collins' voice.
Uh-huh.
I love Gabriel Era Genesis, but actually the one song by Genesis that all of Elbow agree on is one called Entangled on A Trick of the Tail, which is Phil Collins on vocals.
He also sounded great on Wind and Wuthering, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's got a beautiful voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Very similar to Peter Gabriel's.
I think that just happened, you know. And it's often been said that I sound like Peter Gabriel.
That's where I was going to go next, but yeah.
Genesis were my nursery rhymes growing up. My sister Becky in particular would play me, and it really lends itself to that because there's all sorts of crazy, magical imagery in the lyrics.
Yeah.
You've got no horns and you've got no tail. You don't even know of our existence. You know, these are brilliant sort of children's stories set to music. So probably the first stuff I sang along to that was in any way challenging was Peter Gabriel or Phil Collins' voice. So yeah. It kind of makes sense. And you mimic your heroes until you find your own voice. That's mm-hmm. a phrase you hear a lot, but...
But it's true.
Yeah.
And then you guys eventually got to work in Peter Gabriel's studio there in just outside of Bath.
Yeah, we've done a lot of work in Real World, yeah. We did the first version of our first album there over a glorious summer. And since then, we've been back a lot. Yeah, it's a beautiful place. I'm really glad it's still open in the era of all these magic studios, these cathedrals to the making of music and records. They're just shutting down one by one, but that one's still fighting on. And I maintain as well that people don't think it's affordable because you can make a record on a laptop. But the money that you would spend on going to a residential studio, you go so much further into your work if you're living and breathing it 24 hours a day for however long. If you're in a building that's sole purpose is to facilitate your ideas, you get a depth into your writing that you wouldn't do otherwise.
Yeah, and Craig may want to weigh in on this as well, but the idea that, you know, if you produce something on a computer and it has a big horn section or a string orchestra or something, you want that range. You don't want everything compressed into the thick bar that shows up, you know, when you pull up a track on a computer screen. You want to see the jagged line of...
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you're in your bedroom, it's easy to fill up your songs with stuff that's so easily accessible rather than thinking twice about what it really needs. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned before, Guy, that, you know, you've tried the sort of aggressive, slashy, slash-and-burn musical approach, and this next song that you're going to do, Grounds for Divorce, is an earlier song, and the sound here is considerably earthier and bluesier.
Yeah.
So is this something that's still part of your arsenal? Sorry to mention another football team that's probably not yours, but... You know. Well,
this is very much from Mark's rock roots. He was playing this riff for years and years, before it got anywhere near a song. Yeah, at the time that we turned it into a song, we were pretty pissed off. We'd lost a close friend in Brian Glancy, and immediately post Brian dying, loads of people split up. Loads of couples that had been forever couples split up, and loads of people left their jobs, and loads of people left town. And I think losing your first contemporary, because he was only in his early 40s, it made everyone reevaluate their whole lives. I split up with the girl I was with, and this was written in that period. It was like a great big shaking up. And
who was Brian Glancy?
Brian Glancy was a singer-songwriter from Manchester. If you imagine the Fonz, but looking more like Dustin Hoffman, handsome. Very, very funny man. Okay. Very intelligent man, a brilliant songwriter, and a very close friend. And he was... so busy introducing people to one another that he didn't have time for a job or anything like that, you know. He was just a hilarious, beloved man of ours. And he is the seldom seen kid that the album title is. All the songs on that record are in some way related to losing him.
Wow. Yeah. Well, but the Manchester scene has always been full of colourful characters who maybe outside of Manchester lots of people don't know.
Yeah. I mean, well, if you go into the Night and Day Cafe on Oldham Street, at the far end of the bar, there's a huge mosaic by a local artist called Mark Kennedy, and it's of Brian's profile. There he is, the seldom-seen kid behind his favourite bar. Hmm. In this song, there's another bar mentioned. The hole in the neighbourhood down which of late I cannot help but fall is an underground toilet slash bar. It used to be a Victorian toilet. Now it's a bar called the Temple of Convenience. It was another of Brian's haunts. And the Chinese cigarette case mentioned in the song is the only thing I have off Brian's. It's a really cheesy, awful cigarette case with a hologram of Chairman Mao on it. And it's the only thing I own of Brian's.
So you'll never get rid of that?
No.
All right. The album was called Seldom Seen Kid. Let's hear a live performance of the song Grounds for Divorce. It's Elbow, live on Soundcheck. Elbow with an early song, relatively speaking, called Grounds for Divorce from the album Seldom Seen Kid. And Craig, I just have to know what that instrument is you've been playing. That's not our piano, the other keyboard.
It's a wind organ reed thing, but it's got a fan in it. But we attached a sewing machine pedal to it so we could switch it on and off. It's just a one level thing normally. So I've got this pedal that switches the power on and off. That's the fan you can hear. Starting up and down. It's nice, right. Isn't it?
It sounds like something that, you know, I had as a kid in my house.
It's exactly what it is.
Does it have the little chord buttons on
those? Yes, it does.
Does it really? Yeah. Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds great in this context, so
thanks.
Well done.
Thank you.
And Guy playing a bit of harmonica on that piece, and... Pete, more guitar than bass from you today. Is that...
Yeah, I like it.
I don't actually know whether it's easier or harder.
But is this the
touring? There's two more strings, but they're thinner.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So, that seems to sum up, you know, to me, that sums up the bass player in the band, you know.
We played a trick on Pete once.
Two more strings, but they're thinner.
Well, you know, yeah, if you're a bass player, it feels like you have to
play a role.
No, you have to sort of like tell people why you're a bass player. I'm a bass player.
Justify it.
It's like that.
Like being a viola player in the string section.
Yeah. Right. But that's my thing. It's but they're thinner.
All right, so what was the trick that you played on?
All right, Pete? So we got up one morning. Pete was still in bed. We were on tour and we worked out that we all had phone interviews to do for a promotion, apart from Pete. So we gave him a phone interview, a bogus one. And one of our guitar techs, Matt, posed as a Norwegian journalist called Milf Stengeland of Bass Face magazine in Norway. And we spent the afternoon writing questions for Pete to answer. And my favourite couple of questions was, what is the most strings a bass guitar should ever have? And Pete said, 4. And I said, that's the maximum. And he said, yes, 4. And then he went, and the minimum? He said, 4.
The thing is, I had the feeling that something was really odd. So we're at this venue, and with a lot of backstage venues, it's like a ridiculously corridors.
Like Spinal Tap.
I was running round these corridors, trying to be polite, and I was running round the corridors just thinking, if I see, and I had this inkling that it was Matt, who's one of our friends and crew, and I thought, if I see him, then, you know,
the jiggle will be on.
And it literally was. But until I knew for sure, I thought, I have to keep
being polite. Right. Which is why we could play the trick on you. Because you're the only member of the band nice enough to put up with ridiculous questions.
Yeah.
Well, been very nice of you guys to put up with my ridiculous questions here today. We've spent half an hour with Elbow. It is a perfect waste of time. Guys,
lovely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Cheers. Thank you so much. And if it's all, we only pass this way but once, what a perfect waste of time.
You've been listening to an episode of the Soundcheck podcast from our archives. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. You can see and hear much more on our website. Check it out at newsounds.org. For each and every train we miss, a bitter little Eucharist.